Hi, Lenny.
Hi, Nancy.
Welcome to episode 75 of the Front Porch Book Club.
The Front Porch Book Club is a podcast that meets twice a month.
We like to dig deep into the relationship between characters and the worlds they live in.
Grab your book and iced tea and join us on the front porch.
I think people will be interested in hearing about your eclipse plans.
Well, it's coming our way.
Yeah.
It's all exciting.
When is that?
The eclipse is on April 8th. My son is coming home. The governor and the governor of Ohio are making massive plans for tons of people descending on our state. So we're all in eclipse mode. Mm-hmm. We will have two astrophysicists with us viewing.
That seems like that will be helpful.
The last time there was an eclipse, we were together.
Yeah, that was fun.
We came out to Nebraska and I said to my son, 7 years from now, who knows where you'll be, if you'll be working, what's going on, but let's make a plan right here and now that we're going to do it. And here it is 7 years later.
Yeah.
And he has to fly out to me. And it's fun. It's like nothing else.
I remember you guys making that plan.
Do you really?
Yeah, I totally remember that.
Well, we don't know where we'll end up. We'll look at visibility the day before, just like we did when we went to Nebraska. And then we'll shoot out from there.
Do you remember we found that little rural United Methodist church that was having a viewing party in their lawn?
It was perfect. And that's what I hope to find this time.
And they had food for us.
Right. The youth group is selling food. That same kind of scenario.
Well, this month, our book is Carrie Soto is Back by Taylor Jenkins Reid. Jenkins Reid is a powerhouse novelist. She's written some of our most popular contemporary novels the last couple years, including Daisy Jones and the Six, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, and Malibu Rising. I read both Daisy Jones and Evelyn Hugo, and I really wanted us to read this book because not only did I enjoy those other two books, but this book is about tennis. Kind of. It's set in the tennis world. Carrie Soto is a tennis legend who decides to come out of retirement to defend her 20 Grand Slams. And that's being threatened by a young phenom.
Oh, yes. Carrie Soto is back as a New York Times bestseller. Elle Magazine calls it an epic adventure about a female athlete, perhaps past her prime, brought back to the tennis court for one last grand slam.
So I love this book. It was just what I expected in terms of lots, of course, about the characters and what's going on, but lots about tennis and keeping track of tennis games and the scoring and the strategy and the hard work and the practice and working on forehands and working on slices and volleys and all of that stuff. It's not pickleball. So how did you like the book?
I liked the book. I thought Carrie was an interesting character.
Yeah.
But yeah, it takes place in the world of tennis. I can see why you wanted to pick it out because of your tennis playing.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot that I could really relate to as far as Carrie is concerned. I'm playing just to have fun. I'm moving the cholesterol around. I'm having a lot of fun laughing. I mean, the game is called pickleball. There's something humorous just in the name itself.
This story, like so many Disney stories, turns to me on the fact that Carrie's mom dies when she's just a little girl. And her mom thought tennis was sort of silly in a way, but she supported her husband playing it. He was a tennis player in Argentina and moved to the United States. He continued to be a pro. So that was fine with her, but she was not as obsessed with tennis. Without her moderating influence, Carrie and her dad, Javier, become solely focused on tennis. It's how they spend their time together. He's the one who plants this goal in her head that she will become the best tennis player of all time. She accepts that and goes for it. To me, it feels like tennis, in a way, in this story, is an escape for them from their loss and a way for them to be together. So I was curious, from kind of a parenting and psychological standpoint, what did you think about Javier's decision to direct his daughter's goal in life to becoming the greatest tennis player of all time?
I liked Javier. I thought he was a great father. You could tell he loved his daughter through the story, and that what he said and how he coached her and all of that was the best of him. Mm-hmm. What I thought about their relationship was the strain of how to be a parent and how to be a coach.
Yeah.
When looking at him juggle those roles, I thought he did it fine, but how challenging was that? Mm-hmm.
Oh, I liked him very much. It was clear he loved his daughter. And I don't think that Carrie ever questions that her father loves her. But I thought that he did not fully recognize the influence that he had over his daughter when she was young, when he told her she could become the greatest tennis player of all time. I mean, he may have said that just in an encouraging way, but she owns that. She decides, well, that's who she is. That's what she's going to do. He is never able to leaven that goal with anything in her life that gives her balance, that gives her purpose beyond tennis. She becomes a very unbalanced person, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
And he contributes to that, I think, not in a malicious or malevolent way. He loves tennis too, but I think he absolutely contributes to her being so isolated.
I do too. I thought he said that because that's what coaches said to their people.
Just being encouraging, right?
You could be the best you could be.
Yeah.
And sort of that mindset that you can do and achieve great things. But the message is so strong that she is singularly focused to doing that. And then when it looks like her records are going to be surpassed, she can't handle that. Mm-hmm. And he tries to backtrack his message a little bit, but it is so firmly ingrained in her psyche that she doesn't allow him to. And when he tries to step back and say, you know what, that player is actually better than you, so you're going to have to do these things, she can't hear that.
And I thought this book was interesting in illustrating, for some people, the cost of greatness. Now, for Carrie, the cost of greatness is total. But for other people, Bo, her love interest, he is a professional tennis player. He's never retired. He's played into his late 30s. He just really loves playing. He is very temperamental. He's kind of like a John McEnroe kind of character, I think. It's not that he just loves playing and everything is wonderful. He's very temperamental. That's something that he deals with throughout the book. But he loves the game. He's able to have friends. He works well with the media. He has a whole life in addition to being a tennis professional. And then there's Nikki Chan, and she's the young phenom who has now tied Carrie's Grand Slam record. And Nikki is also a very different character. She is just a fierce competitor, but she's able to maintain friendly relationships with other players on the tour. Doesn't mean that she's not competitive out on the court, but she is able to balance that. So I liked how the author, Taylor Jenkins Reid, showed these various ways that professional athletes come to terms with that single-mindedness that is needed to compete at these very high levels. I did love also the media and how putting up with the media is a big part of being a professional athlete, apparently. So throughout the book, we get these interesting little interspersed media commentaries as Carrie decides to return to the game, and what they're thinking when she announces it, and then as she goes through the year of Grand Slams. their commentary is so superficial. They pretend to know more than they actually do. They make these unfounded pronouncements that they think are fact. But an interesting counterpoint to all the work that Carrie is doing, here are these people just kind of commentating on it and the pressure that the media bring to what she's trying to accomplish.
I loved that part of this. It did get under my crawl a bit because the way she is treated as an athlete is different than the way men are treated. She's still supposed to be the little darling, you know, the little tennis darling in her white skirt and smiling and waving at the media, not being harsh or necessarily competitive. And that's not her. And so they kind of call her some names.
Terrible name. Like battle axe is one thing, but then there's worse things that slip out that they call her.
Yeah. If a male says, well, we're going to go out and we're going to beat them, and this is how we're going to do it, and we're the better team, it's like, yes, go, go, go.
Yeah. Love the confidence.
When a woman says, I'm best and I'm going to win, people are like, don't you think you should be a little gracious to your opponent?
Yeah.
So I really liked that part of the book. I thought that she brought that out.
Okay. So we talked about Bo and Carrie's relationship. He has somehow developed pretty good relationship skills. And throughout the book, he's kind of teaching her a little bit about the give and take of a relationship and trust.
He tries. It's a big task.
Yeah. The author, Taylor Jenkins Reid, uses the classic storytelling technique that right when Carrie is at the kind of the pinch point of the whole quest, she has one more grand slam that she can possibly win to take back the record. Javier dies. So this is the classic storytelling technique that now the protagonist must go on alone. So, you know, we saw this in Star Wars, for example, when Obi-Wan Kenobi is killed by Darth Vader. It just happens in many, many stories. But I know you love Star Wars, so I knew you would remember that one.
I do remember that one.
What did you think about how Carrie handled her dad's death?
That was an awakening for her. Without him, her ground starts to really shake there. You kind of, for the first time, see her caring about her father there at the end of his life. Like, hey, how you doing, Dad? I'm by your side. I'm here holding your hand. The tables are turned there, and you actually see some kind of her reaching out to her father rather than either sucking him dry, which he seems like he is able to just give and give and give to her, and that she is able to do that with him. Mm-hmm. And she's 37 when this happens, which is kind of tragic, isn't it?
One of the most poignant parts of the book for me was how Bo is clearly grieving the death of Javier also. But because he's a good romantic partner, he is taking care of her, making sure she is okay. There's only one scene where he is sitting, holding his head, crying, and she thinks, huh, I guess he's sad my dad died too. But it just seems like this foreign idea, one, that she's even recognized it, and two, that she doesn't realize what a close relationship they have forged and that this has affected Bo deeply as well. I mean, it just had not occurred to her at all.
No, it has. Yeah. Here's Carrie at 37. She has stepped away for a number of years and wanting to come back. And she gets her old muscles out there and realizes she's tired running way before she used to. And
right.
The aches and pains that are there now really weren't there before.
Right.
And so her body is feeling much older at 37, obviously. But she still wants to compete and she wants not to be forgotten.
It is amazing, these professional athletes who many really do have a very short window to be playing at their best physically and maybe mentally, although I guess I would argue maybe the mental edge is what helps Carrie compete, even though she no longer has the physical edge. And for someone like Carrie, who is so single-minded about it, I also think that that would be very frightening, because Carrie, then when she finally retires, she has her whole life ahead of her. And then what are you going to do? You've spent maybe most of your life wanting to pursue excellence in athletics, and then you've got to figure out, well, how do I take that energy and that interest and either shift into something very different or continue in the sport that I love in some other way? Although I do feel like we still have a lot of ageism in our culture, I do like that a whole lot of people are doing things much older than they ever thought possible. I mean, the Rolling Stones are still on tour, my goodness.
I know, I love that.
Here are these 80-year-old guys. They're out there strutting their stuff. They're singing their songs and still making a ton of money doing it.
And they still sound good.
Yeah. So Carrie feels like she says she has fought so hard. No one's given her any slack. She's had to do it all on her own as an outsider. I thought another part of the book that was very poignant was when Nikki basically says that every professional athlete has to fight and no one gives anyone any slack. And if you want to talk about an outsider, Nikki talks about being the first Asian woman to win Wimbledon. She feels very strongly that she has now earned the title of best tennis player of all time. But she really wants Carrie's respect. And Carrie mostly will not give her that respect. And I think it's because she feels that doing so lessens who she is and what she has accomplished. And she is unwilling to do that.
Nikki again tries to be a friend. She compliments Carrie. She tries to be pleasant. But Carrie isn't having it. She doesn't want these relationships. These are distractions in her pursuit of her goal. She doesn't feel she needs these people in her life.
Right.
But she misses out on all these great opportunities to grow as a human being. This is really heartbreaking to me, because there are people that she's just mean to.
Yeah.
And she's mean to Nikki. She tries. There's a time that they do go out for drink.
Yeah.
And she does consider her, okay, you know, now that I see her, she's all right. I kind of like her, but she really isn't really a friend to anyone.
No.
That's a lonely life, Nance.
Very lonely. And for instance, when Carrie feels like so much of an outsider, if she would have gotten to know the other tennis players on the circuit, I think she would have realized, boy, they're all outsiders. They've all had to fight hard. She would have felt less lonely.
Yeah.
She could have supported others. Others could have supported her.
Yeah. By the way, Serena Williams is 42. So it kind of puts on a different perspective. I remember, like, when she had her children, I was like, now how is she going to get back in shape? Because that now all of a sudden, I can't be so focused on tennis. I've got another person that needs to be fed.
Yeah.
Bathed, clothed, nurtured. But she was able to continue on. Mm-hmm. And she is very successful.
Mm-hmm.
So Carrie could have done this.
I thought ultimately this book poses some really interesting questions for anyone about legacy. So for Carrie, clearly her legacy is she wants to be the greatest tennis player of all time. And when that's threatened, she decides she's going to defend her title, the whole plot of the book. What do you think about legacy and why legacy is important to people?
Well, for her, I think it was her whole life.
Yeah.
She wanted to be the best. What brings her back out of retirement is that somebody's going to rob her of that right, what she has worked so hard for.
Yeah.
Her father's legacy kind of lives on in her. Now, I think he does have a legacy. He is very well liked. He was good at what he's done. He was able to transition that into another career, and that was coach. He continues to be kind to people, like on the airplane and other things. People like talking to him. And now he has a legacy in Carrie. What Carrie's legacy is just about her rating. She doesn't really have anything else, does she?
No.
It's just her Grand Slam titles. Mm-hmm. What about you, Nancy? Why do you think legacy matters for people and for Carrie in particular?
One of the reasons I like this book is because it asks that question by showing what lengths Carrie will go to defend her legacy. I think this is a human question. How will we be remembered? Will we be remembered? And I think legacy for some people is the pursuit of not being forgotten, that none of us can imagine our death and then we are no more. And I think for some people, the idea is, well, if I do something important, something unforgettable, then I won't be forgotten and my life won't be for no reason. I find this a very interesting question. To what lengths will any of us go to try to be remembered and have a legacy? Because at the end of the day, I actually think we'll all be forgotten.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, there's tons of people who do wonderful things. I don't know about them.
Right.
Who died in wars doing heroic acts, who was a bit pioneer in this or that or all of that. We don't really know who a lot of those people are. Mm-mm. And okay, so maybe we know a name in a textbook, but that doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. Like we know all the presidents of the United States, but we don't really know them.
Yeah.
I mean, we might know the very basics of their biography, but I don't think we know anything about them that matters in terms of who they truly were.
Yeah. I think it's a question that we all have to face at some point. Like, what is the meaning of life? What is the purpose? Why am I here? Mm-hmm. What are my goals? How will I know if I've met my goals? How do I find meaning in life? Carrie finds it through tennis. That is her thing. And then towards the end of it, she finds some meaning in a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Some meaning in people outside of herself a little bit. She starts coaching. She kind of gets some other things going for herself that we kind of think, oh, these things are bringing some meaning and balance into her life.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? That she starts finding some of that?
I do. And that to me suggests that Carrie is able to look beyond wins and see that human relationships are a huge part of what truly matters. I mean, I think that's the implied message here, that it's relationships with others that are very important ultimately, and that she's been blind to that.
Interesting book. Interesting story of Carrie and her very long journey to even getting to that point. Mm-hmm. Because her sole purpose is just one thing. But she does get there at the end. So that's a good part of the story. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. That's a lot to be said out of this little tennis book, I thought.
I mean, it really is. And you think, well, compare Carrie, who, you know, maybe for you wasn't the most likable character, but if her story can have us think about what's important in life and what is worth spending our time on, what does legacy mean to us? I think that's all important. I do think that there are plenty of people by 37 or much older who have never even really asked any of those questions of themselves. Mm. And maybe have been, you know, we are saying, well, Carrie's very selfish. She's very single-minded. They may have been all of that as well.
Yeah. Well, interesting. This book went deeper for me talking to you about it than just me listening to it on audio tape. I kind of got more out of it talking to you about it than just reading it.
Yeah.
Well, the existential questions of life, why we're here and finding meaning. I think I kind of went through that way earlier than what Carrie did. But I did find it interesting to hear that some people go through it later, which I agree with. I wasn't really thinking about that for her, but there are people that think that it's about attaining money or kids or having the fancy house or the boat, and they're singularly looking at those things. And then when they get it, they realize that that's meaningless, that it didn't bring happiness after all. So then they are in a crisis situation and have to figure that out for themselves.
I mean, that's the classic midlife crisis, right?
Right. Okay, so Carrie goes through it.
Yeah.
She comes out a better person, I guess.
How old were you when you went through your existential crisis?
High school.
Okay, that's what I would have guessed, yeah.
Yeah, high school for me. Did you go through one?
Boy, I don't know. I think those are questions I'm continually asking myself, actually.
Well, stop by the front porch the next time. We're going to welcome Jennifer Cumming to the front porch to talk about Carrie Soto. Jennifer is a researcher and professor in sport and exercise psychology at the University of Birmingham in the United Kingdom. She's an expert in mental skills and training for athletes. So she's going to take us and I think help me to understand Carrie a little bit more because, wow, Carrie is all about that. So inside the mind of an athlete, it'll be interesting.
I think that will be really interesting. I'm really looking forward to that. Well, everyone, thanks for listening. Our website is frontporchbookclub.com.
Our episodes come out twice a month on the first and third Wednesday of every month.
See you next time, Lenny.
Thank you. See you, Nance. No. What?